This is the Conway and Carolla Show.
I'll be high as a kite. We'll see how it goes.
With special babbling sidekick, Danny Bonaducci.
Really?
And an occasional appearance by Tom Likas.
Yes.
And also Frosty, Adi, or Frank.
Really?
Maybe even John and Jeff, if they're here early.
Finland?
All right, welcome everybody. It is the Tim Conway Jr. Show live on 97.1 FM Talk. Welcome to everybody listening right now. And we always have Adam Carolla on at 8 o'clock, and this will be no exception. And what we also have done this evening, and it may piss Adam off, but we actually pushed all the commercials back to the 9 and 10 o'clock hour so we can spend some time talking to the man who kicks it off every morning here on this hot FM talker, man. Adam Carolla, how are you, sir?
Great, Timmy.
Hey, look at you, dude.
Mm.
Hey, do you feel any heat from the Jay Leno appearance?
No.
No.
No. It's the saddest thing ever because every comedian dreams, or, you know, we're about the same age. We grew up watching Johnny Carson.
Right.
Johnny Carson would, you know, signal you to come over and sit on the sofa, and that was it. It was a rocket ship to the moon
right. The
next day, right?
Right.
Like, and you hear these guys telling these stories, because whenever they do these A&E stories or these biography stories, they go, and then in 1979, I did the Johnny Carson show, and the next day, when I was walking down the street, pay phones were ringing as I passed them, wanting to congratulate me. I don't know if you've done the Tonight Show, Tim.
You know what? I have, but I have not done it alone. I was a sidekick to my dad when he was doing a sketch. But
well,
that's back when Johnny Carson was doing it. I haven't done it since Len was doing it.
Zero. Nothing. I get nothing. The next day, nothing.
You know, none of the big agents call you? Or
no.
Big producers?
No chicks throwing themselves at you. No scripts coming your way. Nothing. You get a marginal thumbs up from the old lady who's on the phone when you come home, and that's about it. That three-quarter thumbs up.
Yeah, she can't even get the thumb fully up for you.
Right. Yeah, claims you'll get soft if you see it every time. Yeah.
That's too bad.
You walk in your radio station the following day, nary a word.
I know, nothing. I mean, it's nothing. Unbelievable. You know, it's an international television show that you did.
I know, unbelievable. You know,
and yet still absolutely nothing.
Let me ask you this.
Yes.
Are less people watching TV, or are they just playing it closer to the vest?
Well, I have a theory that the people in Southern California, we all live here because we don't give a rat's ass about anything.
Right.
You know, politics, sports, music,
right.
Art,
yeah.
Nothing.
English.
Yeah.
Sure.
Laws, anything. Mm-hmm. Nobody has any regard for anything.
You're right. You know, I'll tell you a couple things. First off, you know, Dr. Drew and I used to do these college tours all the time. And when you travel, you get 3,000-4,000 people every campus every time. And if you want to stay in town, you can't because there's no draw.
Right.
You can go to USC or UCLA and get, you know, a couple of the guys from the band class to come check you out, and that's about it.
Right.
So even at the college level, you can't get people to show up at your gig. You're right. Next time I do the Tonight Show, the second I leave the studio, I'm going straight for the airport. The following morning, I will be in DeKalb, Illinois.
Right.
Or Plentywood, Montana, and I will come out like MacArthur returning to the Philippines.
Like my dad used to do a show with Harvey Korman. They went on the road doing a show called Together Again. And they would literally go to, like, Arizona, where there's a bunch of people who were probably older than us, you know, some retired folks down there. And they would sell out an arena, and they'd do two shows a day. And they get 6,500 people in the early show and 6,500 people on the late show. And, you know, they get almost 13,000 people for one night. And they're all paying, like, you know, 50 or 60 bucks to see the show. But if he did it in L.A., he would literally, there would be about 12 people in the audience.
I know. It's weird.
It is odd.
We're so hardened. And here's the thing, too. people who live in L.A. aren't even from L.A. So what's with the attitude? Because 6 months ago, you were in Illinois, and you would have gone nuts to see Timmy's dad.
Right, exactly. Now look at him. Hey, you know, there was a rumor going around or a speculation that you had insulted Queen Latifah when you were on the Leno show, but that is couldn't be the further from the truth, huh?
Well, it was multi-tiered, too.
Ah, I see.
First is, there was a couple things. A, there was the rumor that I called her fat.
Right.
Now, seriously, dig this. Here's what happened. I was talking about how disappointing the future really is, because we're living in it and nothing's going on.
Right.
I was basically saying I grew up in the 70s. I figured I'd be, you know, driving a hovercraft and having sex with a robot by now. And instead, we just pump our own gas and we have dude stewardesses.
Right.
If someone had told me in 1974, the future, gay guys serving you drinks in airplanes, I would have just killed myself, right? I would have just fallen on a utility ball and killed myself right out on the schoolyard.
That was harder to believe. That would have been harder to believe than flying around on saucers and having sex with robots.
I know. Here's the future of air flight. Let's see, what year is it? 1972. How long does it take to get from LAX to JFK? 6 hours. Okay. It will take 6 hours, except for when you're going through the airport, you will have to empty out your toiletry bag into a trash can, you'll get strip searched, and you'll get the stink eye from some guy whose nationality you can't figure out. And then once you get on the plane, no smoking, but the good news is some Quimby's going to give you a highball.
Yeah, it really is amazing.
Can you imagine telling a bunch of swinging guys in the 70s about this?
Oh, yeah. How far we've fallen back.
Yeah. I do get to have sex with a stewardess and hang out in the cockpit, though, right?
No. You know what's terrible is, you know, for guys like you and Leno and, you know, guys who've made a little dough, where it really works against you in flying, because the first class stewardesses are the ones with the seniority.
Right.
The hot ones are back in coach.
You know, it's weird. I'm so glad you solved this mystery for me, because I'm like, every time I jump on a flight, I got the crypt keeper going through menopause serving me a screwdriver. And I'm like, what happened to all the hot chicks from Mad Men? And it's like, why do I get the Grey Panthers up here every single time? And I start thinking, it can't just be every time. I mean, all stewardesses aren't in their mid-70s. And have a thyroid problem, right? And then I realize, oh, I'm getting the ones who've been flying since they were flying like the Delta Clipper.
Right.
And they, you know, the four proper.
And they've been on their feet for 30 years, so the spider veins are out of control.
Right.
So they've got to wear these black, dark, basically lead colored, you know, pantyhose.
That's it. Okay. Well, you've solved. Well,
thank
now what happened was.
Well, the only reason I know that is because my aunt used to be a stewardess for United Airlines, and my uncle was the head pilot, or the number one pilot with them for about 10 years. And she was like the number four, the number five stewardess for about 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And her job was to fly from Seattle to Honolulu, serve first class, and then fly back for free twice a month. I mean, that was her gig.
Right.
And she was in her 60s when she retired.
I think I've worked with her. You know, well, at least there's an explanation now.
Yes.
Because it's true, the further you head toward the tail of the plane, the hotter the chicks get.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But it
shouldn't be that way, though.
No, I agree. And as far as all the models you think you're going to sit next to in first class, evidently they're flying on someone's G4, because I've never sat next to a model.
All right, Adam Carolla is with us. But when you do fly to Vegas and a halfway decent woman is flying by yourself, hooker, right?
Oh, you figure hooker or the sort of, you know, weekend stripper.
Right.
Fly in. I mean, I think Southwest would go out of business if it wasn't for the weekend hookers who go to Vegas and the weekend strippers that go to Vegas, right? I mean, every time you talk to one of these chicks, they live in Reseda, and they're flying out on Thursday night and they come home Sunday morning.
Right, yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah, Thursday night at Burbank Airport is unbelievable. It's just like, it turns into a spearmint rhino.
Yeah. If anyone was listening, was smart and had a little ingenuity, they would go online, get a fake cop badge, and just go there Thursday night to Burbank Airport and pull some bad lieutenant crap. It'd be worth a try. So what happened is I was doing the Tonight Show on Tuesday night.
Right.
And I was out there with Queen Latifah.
Right.
Although she's now pronouncing it Latifah.
Oh, look at
so
that.
So there could be another wrinkle here.
Oh.
And I said, I thought in the future, according to these movies, there'd be no denim, everyone would be wearing a gray jumpsuit, and there'd be no fatties.
Right.
Now, it's true. In the future, there were no fat people, right?
Right, exactly, yeah.
And there was no denim, as if the 200-year-long run of denim would go out in 9 years. The year 1999. The movie's being made in 1985.
Right.
And denim, which has been around since the, you know, since the gold rush, is gone in 8 years. Denim has been outlawed. So I say fat people, and Jay makes a uh-oh. And Queen makes a, no, you didn't, you know, and the audience gives a woo, and then they all turn on me. And then, the next morning, and the, you know, all this online crap, it's like Corolla calls Queen Latifah fat.
Right.
I didn't call her fat.
No,
I said in the future there'd be no fat people.
Yeah.
And everyone went, no, you didn't. And here's what I'm saying. Tim, if I was just in the room with you and your dad.
Right.
And I said, hey, senior, I thought in the future there'd be no more dumb people. And Tim, you piped up and went, whoa, what the hell? I'm sitting right here. Would that be me calling you dumb? That'd be you thinking you were dumb.
Right.
And then your dad, who would be Jay Leno, is like, well, I like to see you get out of this one.
Right.
I didn't call you dumb.
Yeah, he did let you hang out to dry.
You could argue, I know, you could argue that I didn't think you were dumb or I
right.
would have said anything.
That's
in front
exactly
of you.
Right. Well, I was also referring to...
Well, there's another incident.
Yeah, the other incident where some people said you called her a dyke.
This was the most unfortunate coincidence that has happened to me on a talk show in quite some time. Just her... I don't know if you're familiar with this phrase, Lyman, but it's, you know, Virgin Islands for chillin'.
Right.
I'm Lyman.
Yeah.
I am Lyman.
I didn't know about it until the other night, but now I know what it means, yeah.
I talked to a friend of mine who grew up out there, and he said it's very common to say you're Lyman.
Right.
And she just got back from her Christmas vacation, Lyman, on the Virgin Islands.
Right.
And that was her whole first segment. She literally said the phrase Lyman like 28 times. I'm Lyman. I'm just Lyman. Everyone's Lyman. Jay, you got to learn how to Lyman, man.
Right.
Lyman. Lyman this, Lyman that. So I'm doing my segment, and I start getting into my shtick about the kids' toys and the kids' parties, and Tim, we'll do the 11 o'clock hour on that. Screw John and Jeff. I'm saying, I don't know if your fingers have recovered from trying to get all the Dora... the Explorer crap out of the hermetically sealed in the cardboard box.
And everything's wired in.
Everything's wired in.
Not only is it wired in now, but they also have the screws with the big plastic washers.
And the micro screws.
Right.
Which inevitably causes a fight because I'm over at my sister's house and we're opening gifts for the kids and I'm screaming at her, you mean to tell me you don't have a micro Phillips head screwdriver in your house? Jesus Christ. What the hell are you thinking?
Right. When you have a 3-year-old, you got one on you.
And they're screaming, and they want their crap, and you're like, Daddy's got to go get his Leatherman from the car, you know, to get into the goddamn Thomas the Tank Engine thing. Anyway, so she does the whole Lyman this and Lyman that. I pull, you know, the next segment I'm out there, I pull my present out of the package. I'm showing all the wiring, and I go, You need a pair of lineman dykes to get this thing open. And I'm evidently then hand the package to her.
Right.
Of course, I said lineman dyke.
Right.
And dykes are they're cutters. They're right. Diagonal. They're diagonal cutters that, and linemen are the guys who do the telephone line.
Yeah, the guys on the pole, right.
The heavy-duty wire cutters.
Yeah, really heavy-duty wire cutters. Right.
Right. But, of course, after the show, all the producers run up to me and they go, did you call her a lineman dyke? Because it was like, if she hadn't done her 20 minutes on linemen,
right.
It would have been fine. And if I'd said snippers or channel locks or vice grips or pliers, it would have been awesome.
Right.
But I said lineman dyke and handed her the thing, and everyone in the booth thought I called her lineman dyke.
That is so great, man.
I know. And then there was a great, like, had to be there moment where I just stepped off the front of the stage. Queen Latifah was walking around somewhere. And let's just put it this way. Queen Latifah's, you know, coming on 40 and not married. Let's just put it that way.
All right.
I step off the front of the stage. Jay's standing, you know, to the side of the stage, taking pictures with fans. Queen Latifah's floating around. The Pussycat Dolls are floating around. And quickly I get surrounded by concerned producers.
Oh,
what
Jesus.
What did you say? What did you say?
Oh, God.
What did you say? I said, what? What are you talking about? You said dyke? You said lineman dyke? No, lineman dyke. What are dykes? There's five people around me. And, of course, because Hollywood is just chicks and gays, nobody knows what diagonal cutters are. No one knows what dykes are.
But, but there are so many chicks and gays that even if you were to put one in the guy's hand and you know, run him up a pole and he snaps wire, he still wouldn't know what it was.
Right. So they said, did you call Queen? I said, oh, no. I said, lineman dykes, like, you know, cutters, dykes, just, you know, like, you guys are heard of dykes, just dykes. And the one woman, like, out of a movie stops me and goes, could you please stop shouting dykes?
That's great.
It was like out of a movie.
Can you please stop shouting dykes?
Queen Latifah's floating around behind me with her posse somewhere, and I'm standing there yelling dykes over and over to the producers.
Yeah, and they, from, you know, 12 feet away, she has no idea what the conversation is about. She thinks you're just piling on.
All she sees from behind is wild gesticulations followed with the word dyke.
By the way, I think, and I hate to say this because I think they may all be nice ladies, and the woman who puts it together is great. But I think the Pussycat Dolls are turning into a one hit wonder. No,
I guess
wasn't it the first one and out?
I don't. You know, I would love to say yes, but I would say, you know, if you asked me about Hannah Montana, I'd say,
right,
who watches that show?
Right, that's
it. And I would
right.
be wrong. There was a funny scene when, you know, you have to go watch them perform.
Oh, yeah, right.
You leave the sofa.
Yeah, you got to go shake their hand.
And you watch them perform, and then you shake their hand.
Right.
And it's a great scene of them, you know, they're dressed like, you know, nurses and Catholic schoolgirls,
right.
They're singing their hit, I Know You Want to Have Sex with Me, But I'm Not Going to Let You, or
right.
You know, whatever. It's basically every song,
right.
Every one of those chicks do. It's like, you want me because I'm hot, but you
right.
can't have any song. And they're doing that, and it's me and Jay Leno, arguably two of the whitest, least rhythmic guys on the planet, and Queen Latifah.
Ah.
And Queen Latifah knows the song.
Oh, okay.
So while they're doing their song, Queen Latifah's mouthing along and doing the moves.
Mm.
And Jay and I are just standing there like the two most uptight squares. You've got like friends of your dad's when you're growing up from the insurance office.
Now you have to get up off the couch and go stand
yeah,
there and watch them?
Get up off the couch, you go
oh,
stand
Jesus
and watch them. And so Jay, during the song, says, you know, which one do you like? I said, I like the drummer, who was a heavyset black guy. And he said, yeah, I'll take the redhead. And I said, yeah, the redhead is hot. And then after their performance, we went to go, you know, talk to him, do the promo, or whatever. And the redhead was hot, and I started talking to her, and she said, I've been to your house.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Wow, what a stud, dude.
I said, I like where this is heading. And she said, yeah, my friends rent your house up there in the Hollywood Hills. Huh? I said, oh, okay, I got my old house. I rented out.
Oh, I see. Right, okay.
Then she pulls this one. A lot of activity in there. Oh, Christ, here we go.
Doesn't that make you feel great?
Here we go.
Very, very little activity when you were there.
Now, what kind of activity? She goes, spiritual.
Oh, no.
The place is haunted.
I'm
like, here we go. Another hot chick. I suppose the Zodiac wheel could have come out, but lots of spirits. Needs a clearing.
Oh, man.
And I did what all guys do, and we become enablers, and this is why we need to stop, is I gave the, really?
Oh, yeah.
Lots of spiritual activity.
Instead of just shutting it down?
I have to look. Now, if this was the fat stewardess who was up in first class, be listen, Husky, you shut up with that nutty ghost-chasing crap already.
Right, exactly.
But when the hot chick tells you, it's like, I'm going to look into this.
Yeah, you're going to get your spirit dykes out and cut them out of that house.
You may be on to something here.
Yeah, isn't that amazing, though? You're right. If they're hot, like, I met a chick, a stewardess on a TWA flight coming from St. Louis to Los Angeles. And she was really hot, and she said she was moving to Seattle, and I said, you know, it really rains a lot in Seattle. And she said, no. She said the ozone zone is actually changing where it doesn't rain as much. I said, what zone? She said the ozone zone. And instead of correcting her, you go, yeah, you know what? I've been reading about that ozone zone.
Right.
You know, you just pile on. You just join them.
Right. And if she was an ugly chick, it'd be like, hey, why don't you go back and get your GED? Wait a minute. First, get me a cocktail.
Yeah. Get your GGED. Hey, Adam Carolla is with us. I don't know if there's two groups of guys in high school. And if you went to a high school party, which I'm sure you did a lot, there's the group of guys that have matured early, earlier than I did. And they're hitting on chicks and drinking and, you know, trying to get laid. And then there's the other group of guys who's beer bonging and throwing the patio furniture in the pool.
Yeah.
And I was in that group.
Yeah, I was.
And I always thought that was a lot more fun than doing what they did. But it's got to be real confusing for women at that point because they've all matured already.
Yeah,
all of them
point.
Are mature, but now they've got two groups of guys to choose from. They can choose the the hot guy with a cardigan sweater who's already driving, a little mustache, and he's sipping on a glass of wine, or the maniac who's trying to get up on the roof so he can jump off in his underwear into the pool and do a cannonball.
Yeah, it is weird because they come online at the same time, you know, like 14 and a half, and then they all settle in, and it's not like they have 17-year-old friends running in yelling, Tammy's drunk and passed out on a Barca lounger. I'm going to draw a penis on her forehead. Who's got a Sharpie? That doesn't happen with 17-year-old chicks. But you can sure bet it did with my friends. My friends, and speaking of the pool, had a policy where you were going in, so there were two ways we could play this. You could struggle and get your shirt torn and go in the pool, or you could just throw yourself into the pool.
Right.
And
but you're going in.
Especially my big friend Ray, it was clear that people began tossing themselves like lemmings into the pool. But the funniest one is Jack Donitz. Jack Donitz, and that's the same guy who Ray fired his spear-fishing gun through his hamper and into his wall. But Jack Donitz said, look, I'm going in the pool. He kicked off the loafers. He pulled his leather wallet out, and he said, I'm ready. And he threw himself in the pool. And before his head popped up, the loafers and the wallet were floating in the pool right after him. Like, you could never do that with Ray or us. Like, announce, okay, all right, just let me take the wallet out. Oh, no, now for sure the wallet's going in. You could have chucked it into a bush while you were throwing yourself into the pool, maybe we wouldn't have got it. But there's no way you're setting it down on a piece of patio furniture and throwing yourself in the pool.
You know, I went to school, I went to college in Bowling Green, Ohio, and I found a group of guys that still hadn't matured, even in college. And I thought, wow, this is great. I don't have to sit here and, you know, try to get chicks and, you know, behave at a party. We can go apes here in college. And what we do is we'd go up to the third floor in the dormitory. And once the dorm is shut down, we'd take all the furniture and throw it out the window on the third floor, right? Yeah. And the couch would hit and it would splinter all over the place. The TV would break. And then the cops would come up and try to figure out who did it. And, you know, everybody was, mum's the word. And another thing we used to do is there was no air conditioning in our dorm. Mm-hmm. Everybody just had their windows open and their fans on.
Right.
So we would, and, you know, sweating at night. It's 100 degrees and about 95% humidity in Ohio, in northern Ohio.
Sure.
So we'd go to Kmart and buy, like, 15 pounds of baby powder.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you just sort of pour it down and into the guy's window, and it cakes his entire dorm room.
My buddy Jeff Katz threw an entire 5-pound sack of gold medal flour into my patent industrial fan. You know, I mean, I'm not talking about the little oscillating one on the pedestal. I'm talking about the big metal one that was on high. It was a whiteout in my room, and I had Weevils in there 6 months later, and there was always flour in my room from that day on. That was in high school. It took two more years in there with flour.
But again, that's got to be confusing for the women. Like, when we did the powder thing, the guy who lived below us, his name was Bill, he had his girlfriend over for the night.
Yeah.
And she wakes up in the morning, and they're both, you know, completely white. It was a whiteout, and they're both powdered. She happened to be a black chick too, which even made it worse. But it's got to be confusing to women when they see two groups of guys. I think they're attracted to the guys, you know, doing cannonballs nude off the roof, but they can't let themselves go over there because they will be ridiculed by the rest of their friends.
We would go. You ever been up to the Mulholland Club?
You mean the what do they call it? Lover's Lane, like up
tennis,
there?
Yeah, it's like a tennis club up there in Mulholland between Laurel and Coldwater.
Laurel and Coldwater. Oh, yeah, I know that. Yeah, absolutely.
The top, very top of the hill.
Yeah.
We used to break in there every summer and just in midnight and climb onto the third-story roof naked and do cannonballs into the pool. It was like, we'd do the exact same thing.
Right.
Look for roofs to jump off of and bodies of water.
Right.
I don't know. You know how you can tell what guys are into it and what guys and who aren't? Like just a quick test? Because you're right. Like, some guys are like, what, you know, what do I want to do that for when I can, you know, be getting it on with some chick? Or you can just tell what their sensibility is. It's just, you just go fart on them. And if they laugh hysterically, they're in. And if they give you that, dude, what's up? Then they're not in. Your ass will be the divining rod.
Right, exactly. You know, I Adam Carolla, by the way, is with us. And I had to use the public men's room today. And there were two little tiny stalls and then the big, the dipper, you know, the suite, the handicap stall. So I slide into the handicap stall, and, you know, you just hope you don't see wheels pacing back and forth halfway through it.
Right.
And you never really do. But I always thought that was a much more, like, an egregious violation on the handicap than parking one of their spots outside.
You know, it's weird. Much is made about parking in their spot, but parking your ass on their throne is much more egregious. And it should be a stiffer fine, although it never seems to be.
Yeah, because I can barely get into the smaller stalls now. They've really tightened up the smaller ones, and then the other one is a suite at Caesar's Palace.
Big chandelier hanging in the foyer. It is funny. It's like that we're talking about air travel. The ones in the planes have gotten, maybe we've gotten bigger and they haven't grown with us.
Right.
But I do that move where I lean forward and put my head on the ceiling, and I'm like an ironing board leaned up against the wall at a 45-degree angle. And my biggest problem is I always kick my shoes off. And here's how the flight works for me every time. Flying, you know, 6-hour flight to New York. I got a first class ticket because I didn't pay for it. Maybe I'm doing Letterman. Maybe I got another gig, but whatever it is. So somebody's flying me to New York, and my agent said you got to give him a first class ticket. So I'm up in first class. I got Leatherface up there from Pan Am back in the day, serving me the highballs. And somewhere around my sixth or seventh Bloody Mary, 4.5 hours into the flight, I realized I got to take a whiz. I'm too drunk, my feet are too swollen from the altitude, and I'm too lazy to put my shoes back on.
Right.
So I walk over there in my socks, but now I got a bathroom that's got 4 hours of flight under it. So some of the guys didn't have the greatest aim in the world, and I can see around the toilet is a no-fly zone with the socks. Because the last thing, I'd rather be barefoot than be in the sock, because the sock is going to wick it up. That's just going to be the wind sock.
Yeah, it becomes a super chamois.
That becomes a Shamu. Sham wow, yeah. I got a whiz full, I got a foot full of sham wow whiz, which is really what they ought to use for the demonstration. You want to talk about the ultimate? You got to get this up. So
that's great.
I do the move where I stand 3 feet from the bowl with my feet because I can't get any closer to it, and then tip myself over until my forehead hits the slope ceiling.
I know, you feel like a giant in there.
Gulliver's Travels, taking a whiz.
I like the guys who must, it's really a handicap in America to be a guy who is 5'4" or shorter. I mean, really, truly is. And those guys have it slammed in their face when they stand up and their head doesn't hit the overhead luggage rack on an airplane. You know, they're literally standing on the window seat and the overhead compartment is not touching their head. Those guys have got to feel like circus clowns at that point.
Yeah, on one hand, but on the other hand, every car's a limousine and every seat's first class. You're driving around a Toyota Tercel and you're in a stretch limo.
And every drink is a double.
We went out of town this year and we were driving and I was driving my car. And I was wearing some boots or something because we're going up to the snow. And I'm 6'2 and change. And my wife was looking at me, looking like I was bent over the steering wheel, And she said, "Why don't you move the seat back?" And I said, "This is as far as it goes. It doesn't go any further than this. I'm driving an Audi. It doesn't go. It's made to stop at about 6'1".
Right.
And I'm 6'2", and I'm wearing the boots. And she goes, "You look." I kind of am. I mean, the world is meant for the 5'9½" guy.
Right. That's what they designed it for. Speaking of the handicap, though, in the economy, in today's crappy economy, and again, this is not a bash on the handicap. It is on the economy. But I don't think that many guys who are handicapped can now afford the special vans with the lifts.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So why don't we take 3, 4, maybe 5 spaces away from them and we can enjoy a shorter walk to Vons?
Well, also, the word van pool, it's got the word van right in the front. You know what I mean? What's wrong with going by and picking up all the guys in the wheelchairs in the one van? And those things are never filled up. They're always prime spaces.
Oh, yeah.
And they mock you. Because for a brief moment, you wish you were handicapped, you're that lazy. As you able-bodiedly just pass by him, you think, "God damn, I wish I had a rod in my leg or scoliosis or something that I could utilize this space here."
The only place where I've ever seen them full, and they have about 150 of them out at Santa Anita, is during like a Sunday or Saturday at the races. They're all jammed, man. And they're not filled with guys that are handicapped. They're filled with gamblers.
Right.
They're gambling on not getting a ticket while they're in there.
Oh, interesting. So that's the mentality.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you go to a casino, and they're not filled with handicaps. The guys are just taking a shot that it won't be 62-50 when they get out there.
I love that. So they literally roll the dice in the parking lot before they even go into the casino.
Right, they're gamblers. And, if you drive home from Santa Anita after the last race, you'll see about 150 guys fly by you in the diamond lane alone. They're gambling.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
And it makes sense. I never thought about it.
Yeah, that's what they do. They just gamble, man. Hey, Adam Carolla, again, is with us. When you were a kid, you were my age, did you watch Speed Racer?
Yeah, I was addicted to it.
Yeah, I was too. But did you also, you know, the real guys, like, I admit to watching Speed Racer, and I think I'm probably a little bigger man than most, because I'll admit to sitting there on the TV afterwards and picking up a half hour to an hour of Kimba the White Lion. Yeah.
I'm not familiar with that show, Timothy. Yeah, I would watch that.
But nobody admitted that they watch it. And why didn't Kimba the White Lion go on to be a big Hollywood success?
When we get in trouble and we're in a fight, right. Who's the one that just won't turn and run? Who's the king of doing good and doing right? Kimba the White Lion is the one. Yeah. Daniel Baboon.
I wonder why they never, maybe that's a racist thing, you know, because the good lion was the White Lion.
Yeah, the Kimba the White Lion was another one of those crazy Japanese anime things where everything had super wild saucer eyes. I felt like, even when I was a kid, I wanted to yell at the Japanese, look, it's not that our eyes are so big, it's that your eyes are so goddamn small. So stop drawing our eyes like they're frisbees. All right, they're just regular. It's normal. Travel around the world. You'll find plenty of these eyes.
You know, Arsenio Hall did a cartoon last year, and it came back, and it was drawn in South Korea. And it came back, and he was just amazed. He was completely shocked and embarrassed. But it was like a step and fetch. I mean, it was like the big black guy with the big lips and the big teeth and the white eyes. You know, because I think that's just what they think of white guys and black guys, you know?
Well, I mean, I guess it's like when you're, you know, back to Jay Leno, when they're going to do a caricature of him at the Italian restaurant, they overdo the chin a little bit.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Maybe it's just that. Maybe they think this is our number one feature, and they're just going to overdo it a little bit.
That's right.
I wish they'd focus on the groin, by the way.
Yeah, right.
Then
exactly.
You hear no complaints. But, yeah, Kimba would come on after Speed Racer, and because we were so starved for input, for stimulation, for entertainment, we just all sat there and watched a cartoon that we didn't like for half an hour.
Yeah, on UHF, or like Channel 52, it came on.
Yeah, I have done this jag many a time. You know, these guys get a pass. You know, Hanna-Barbera, the guys who did, you know, Grape Ape and Hair Bear Bunch, and all, you know, Wally Gator and all these crappy cartoons from our childhoods. I mean, Grape Ape and Magilla Gorilla, they didn't even talk. It was just a purple ape that said Grape Ape over and over and over again. And we had to watch.
Right.
Essentially, what this was these were American car companies in the 70s or the 60s. Like, what are you going to do, drive a Subaru?
Right, exactly.
I don't think so. Tough S. You'll take what we give you and you'll like it.
Right.
And so they started making junk, and we just had to do it. There was no cable. There was no satellite. There was no DVDs. So we just, I mean, could you imagine taking your kid and sitting her down in front of Grape Ape?
No.
My dad, my kid would take a running swing in my groin with this Thomas the Tank Engine. I mean, are you kidding me? They couldn't get 5 minutes into that crap we used to have to watch.
I know.
That stuff was junk, and it was artistically bankrupt. There was nothing in it. Wasn't clever. Wasn't cute. Wasn't well executed. Wasn't
right.
Well drawn. Wasn't anything. It was just pure junk.
And there was no education in it. At least, you know, as much as you can't stand Dora the Explorer, at least the kids pick up a couple of Spanish words. You know, and I don't know if you saw this one. It's called Yo Gabba Gabba.
Yeah,
you look
yeah,
at that?
I've seen
it.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, and where they sing songs like "Don't,
yeah.
Don't bite your friends."
Yeah, right. I just want, look, all I want, out of Dora the Explorer, because she does that all the time. She's like, do you know where the magical backpack is? Good. Just once out of every six times go, you're wrong.
Right.
Because kids get a sense of entitlement. My kids just sit there stone-faced staring at the round-faced Mexican chick who's yelling, do you know where the waterfall is?
And how about
good.
That? The idiot that comes on and 10 times will tell you where the stuff is. The map guy. You know, the forest, leaking water, rain forest.
Backpack. Oh, by the way, boy, are my kids going to be disappointed when I give them their first backpack.
Yeah, right.
Their ass doesn't talk, doesn't sing, doesn't have any magical powers whatsoever.
Right, it's over.
What the F?
Hey, Adam Carolla is with us. We had talked about this this week on the show, but I went to have my wheels aligned because my wife ran our SUV into a pole, and there wasn't a lot of damage to the car, but the wheels were out of alignment. You know what happens after a while? The tires rub down, and it costs you double.
Sure.
So I learned from being a child and having that done at 16, 17, 18 a couple of times, so I take it in, and the guy's aligning the tires, and this Middle Eastern guy comes in with a nice Mercedes, and he says, I need my tires aligned. And he says to him, he goes, we don't do that here. He goes, no, on the sign it says alignment. He says, no, the machine's broken. He's okay, well, screw it, I'll go somewhere else. So he splits. And I said, why'd you do that? I said, obviously he could see you're working on my alignment. If he was smart, that's the same machine.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, I don't deal with people from the Middle East, whether they're from Israel or Syria or Iraq or Iran. I don't deal with those people. And I said, but you're in Encino or like Tarzana. And there's a lot of those people around that could account for, 20-30% of your income. He goes, I don't care. But,
really?
but how open he was about, being completely racist with a total stranger. I've never met the guy in my life.
Mm. Well, I'll tell you what it probably was. There's that part of the world haggles.
Yeah, that's what he said.
Probably done with the haggling. We don't haggle over here. It's like $79.95 plus tax for the two-wheel alignment.
Right.
And whenever you deal with those Middle Eastern guys, they're like, it is $14. Like $79.95. $18. $79.95. Last bid, $21. So they probably, somebody needs to give them, I'm not saying this guy's not a racist, don't get me wrong, but somebody needs to explain to people who come here from other countries where haggling's a way of life that we don't haggle.
Right. And some people might, and that's where they pick it up from. But yeah, for the most people, for the most part,
you can haggle on someone's lawn.
Right.
When you're at a garage sale,
right.
When you're like, best of Eddie Money on A-Track, $7? That smells like four to me.
There was some comedian, I can't remember, I think his first name was Jake, who used to do this routine. But
Jake
Johansson? Oh, yeah, Jake Johansson. Yeah, that's exactly what it was, man.
I don't know that guy.
Yeah, he's a very funny guy. He said he had a yard sale, and him and his wife were having a yard sale. And a lady comes by and says, how much is that lamp? And he said, it's a quarter. And she goes, yeah, but it doesn't have a shade on it. He goes, yeah, well, that's why it's a quarter.
Right.
And he says, at that point, what you want to do is grab her and tie her to a stake and burn her in your front yard. But he said, that cuts down on foot traffic for the rest of the sale.
Well, it is true that if I had a business where Middle Eastern guys came in and haggled with me constantly, I would probably steer clear of them. But look, let me explain how racism works. It's usually rooted in something. If black guys ain't tipping as good as white guys, then the waitresses don't want to go over to work the black table, even if this black guy's a big tipper.
Right. Well, I mean, look at the only real group I think that embraces their stereotype are the Irish. You know, on St. Patrick's Day, everybody drinks.
Right.
And the number one football team in the United States of America, Notre Dame, the number one Irish football team, they're literally called the Fighting Irish.
Yeah, I know. You know, it's funny, though. I was talking to a friend of mine about the black stereotype, and you know, I know it's been said by more people than me, but if somebody wanted to just assume I had a great vertical leap and a huge Johnson, I'd leave him alone. This guy's got great hops, and boy does he fill out some board trunks. Like, don't you feel like you'd let him run with that one?
Absolutely.
You feel like would you feel like you needed to write a letter, like an angry letter about that one?
Right.
That is the one I would let, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Let him take that one.
Yeah, they're absolutely. But but that is, you know, one of the few stereotypes, you know, that doesn't bother people. Is that, you know, the black guys have big wieners.
So does this guy at the alignment place, is he prejudiced against Arab guys because he's PO'd about 9/11 or because of the haggling?
I don't know. I didn't get into it with him much. I just, you know, he's a big guy who had a big red beard, and he was really pissed off at something.
Merlin Olsen from Little House on the Prairie.
And, you know, even though I know my way around, you know, a shop where I can look and tell, like, what's wrong with the car, I still am intimidated by these guys. You know, you don't want to touch their tools. You don't want to step in their shop. You know, it is their area.
Yeah, there's always that weird thing when you're sitting in the office and you're reading that magazine, which is always the shop magazine. So you're reading an article on drum brakes versus disc brakes. And, you know, and then there's one that says throw out bearing, friend or foe. You're going to have to read that article later because there's always the shop industry magazine you have to sit there and read.
Right.
And then there's that point where you stand up and you see through the glass that your car's out there.
Right.
And you want to go to your car, but it's unclear. Do you cross that sacred line from the lobby into the shop area?
Right.
And then when you do, you're always kind of scared you're going to get yelled at.
Right.
I don't care how old I get. I never get over that part where when I step off the linoleum onto the concrete,
oh, yeah,
and start making my way past the tool chest, I always figure some guy's going to yell at me.
Right, exactly. No matter, even though, like, your buddy might own the shop, you know, you still, some mechanic's going to yell at you for doing that.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether, you know, that's their power trip or what. Because I think, you know, I have a theory also that that the Highway Patrol has sort of like the same thing, where they have a power trip. When they close down a freeway, they don't hurry up to open it up.
No, they never seem to.
They enjoy, I think, stopping people and watching thousands of cars just sitting there while they do their job.
I see people pulled over, like, on Highland in rush hour all the time, and everyone's just rubbernecking. And, you know, the thing that's, well, a couple things that are pathetic. One, stop handing out the chicken-ass tickets. You're slowing things down. I got pulled over on Highland for no front license plate,
right,
which is obviously ridiculous. But then as I get pulled over, we take up the right lane, and then it bottlenecks, and it's rush hour. I'm going to work in the morning, and it wasn't this job. It was another job,
right,
but it's 9:30 in the morning. I'm getting pulled over, and everyone else is just trying to pay their taxes and head to work. But also,
and you know what the cop will do is you'll be pulled over in the right-hand lane. He'll block the right-hand lane and part of the next lane with his car.
And but let's examine the rubbernecking thing for just one second, Timmy. We all know what a cop car looks like, right? And we all know what a cop looks like.
Right.
He's the doofus dude from high school who you're kind of scared of, who was the backup guard on the football team.
Right.
We all know that dude. We can see, you know, there's no gunshots being exchanged here. Some secretary's getting a ticket for expired tabs. How much slowing down do we really need to do for this ritual that we've seen many, many, many times? And are we curious, or is it that thing that's instilled in all of us, which we only feel better when someone else is miserable?
That's exactly what it is.
And you just do that, ooh. And it started like in the third grade when the teacher would be like, Timmy Conway, I'd like to talk to you after class.
Yeah.
Ooh. Now you're 40 and you're in your car and you're driving, and you're going, ooh. Someone's getting a ticket.
And you know when you really feel good is when the guy is over there doing the DUI test.
Ooh,
with the nose.
Yeah. Busted.
Yeah.
Busted.
And I
bet his day is ruined.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that's going to cost him. Oh, I feel so much better about myself because I saw a stranger getting pulled over.
You know, I used to think that that drunk driving was a real negative connotation. It was a real negative sort of vibe to the whole deal that you got caught drinking and driving. Now I'm convinced that it's just complete dumb luck that I haven't been pulled over.
Well, I've said it once, I've said it a thousand times. I've circled the globe 80 times over the legal limit. Let's be honest.
Right.
Easily.
Right.
I mean, I'm, and I know everyone makes a face and you're not supposed to say this kind of stuff, but everyone can kiss my hairy ass. I've done it. I've driven technically drunk to the sun and back.
Right.
I'm a good driver, and also when I'm at a party and I have a couple of cocktails, I'm aware I'm buzzed and drive accordingly. I'm not like, well, I'm going to go do some donuts in the Gelson's parking lot, burn off a little fuel before I head back to the apartment. I realize.
Yeah, as you said before, which I got from you, you drive like you got two dead hookers in the trunk.
That's how everyone should drive once you've caught a buzz.
Right.
And that's how I drive, and that's probably why I've never been pulled over. But I don't cast too much judgment on other people because it could have happened to me at any given time.
Oh yeah, easily. I mean, I don't like to say that I used to drink, and I know I don't because I got a kid, and they'll take the kid away from you, and that's a real bad vibe. But back when I was younger.
I did get pulled over drunk with my kid, and I was like, switch seats with me.
Oh,
she's like, I'm two and a half. Get in the driver's seat. She blew an 06, so she was fine.
But I have had, have you had to do the sobriety test?
No, I've never.
Is that right?
I probably got pulled over like when I was high or something.
Right.
You know, once or twice, and maybe like way back in the day or something. But no, I've never.
It's
nerve-wracking. Crazy. I drive crazy in the morning, and I drive crazy all the time. But if I'm ever drunk or high, I don't drive crazy because I don't want to get pulled over.
Right. Exactly.
I should do PSAs. For the Highway Patrol. Hey, I'm Adam Carolla. Hey, no, I'm not telling you not to smoke any reefer or tilt back a few. I'm saying take it easy.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's the guy who has 32 drinks and him and his a-hole buddy decide to take the top off the convertible and drive to Vegas.
Well, also, I mean, look, let's just be honest for a second here. Me and you are what we call heavyweights.
Right.
I'm not going to have a couple of wine coolers over at Kimmel's and then get on the wrong ramp on the 134 and start heading into oncoming traffic like Nicole Richie.
Right.
It doesn't happen.
Right.
I go over to Jimmy's, drink 26 Heinekens, and walk home, and you wouldn't know if you stopped along the way if I was drunk or not.
I'm the same way. My wife still says she can't tell when I'm drunk after 15 drinks.
Right. So the point is the people that cause all the tragedies are the lightweights.
Right.
They get drunk, they leave the party, they leave the bar, they do whatever, they get on the freeway off-ramp, and they're coming into oncoming traffic, and they steer straight into a car. And then everyone goes, hey, drunk driving is such a tragedy. It is, but especially when you're a lightweight and you can't handle your booze, and you think it'd be a good idea to drive into headlights.
Yeah, and those are the guys killing it for everybody. And now that you've seen the new posters out, driving buzzed is like driving drunk. Jesus
guilty
Christ.
Guilty as charged. I don't know what to say, but I do a lot of things drunk, and I'm fine.
Well, yeah, I mean, I have, you know, it's been years and years and years of training where I, you know, thank God, by the way, and I'm sure you know guys like this. You may have a couple of buddies from, North Hollywood who are like this, but they'll have two beers, and they become hostile and racist and want to fight everybody. You know, they flip out on two beers.
No, that's just the guys from North Hollywood. Two beers mellows them out a little bit. They're hostile and racist until you give them a couple of beers, and then they even out.
Right.
You got to give them the beer.
But thank God that I'm not like that, where, you know, my brother's like that. He can have two beers, and he flips out. He thinks the world's coming after him. He wants to, you know, he's paranoid. He hides.
Yeah, and they you start yelling, dude, maintain as loud as you can, and he doesn't listen to you. And
hey, have you ever done this though? When you like, I don't buy. When's the last time you bought a 6-pack of beer?
Oh, geez, been a while. I mean, you mean like gone into the store and bought? I mean, buy like a case of beer, like when I go to the market.
Yeah, I buy a case or a 12-pack is about as low as I go. But I've never, I can't remember the last time I bought 6 beers.
Well, I'll buy a 6-pack when I'm not going to drink it to show up at a party to hand someone to someone else to then drink 16 of their beer.
Right, exactly. But to just get a 6-pack and bring it home, I can't remember the last time I did that. It's like going to McDonald's and getting 2 McNuggets.
I'll have 3 fries and 2 McNuggets and a piece of pickle from the burger. I agree. I always like, I've had 1,000 of these. Tim, you and I got to get loaded together because evidently we're both great drunks.
Oh, yeah.
I remember things. I don't black out. You know, I can't tell you all the time where I've had that conversation with a guy where I've been like, dude, you're wasted. You don't know what you're saying. You're in that dude's grill. That guy's a mixed martial artist. You're effing with his girlfriend. You need to back off and sit here. Just sit. I'm just telling you, just sit on this love seat. I'm grabbing the keys in my coat. I'll be back in 10 seconds. We're getting out of here before I get you killed.
Right.
Just sit there. And then you leave, you come back 10 seconds later and in the guy's grill again.
Right.
And you're like, really? No part of that conversation you understood. I know you're drunk. I'm drunk too. I know you're drunk. Do you not know? Did you forget what you were doing over the past 5.5 hours? Just drinking excessively? Like, if I woke up drunk, I would be confused.
Right.
But I've been holding a beer for the last 7 hours. I know what I'm doing. I'm drunk. I'm aware of that.
Right.
It's weird when you get drunk, you don't know you're drunk.
Oh, I know. It's unbelievable. I don't know. Like, for instance, last year I went to the Kentucky Derby 2 years ago in Vegas. I went to watch it in Vegas. And I go there on a Thursday, drink, you know, and gamble Thursday, Friday. I call my dad Saturday morning from Vegas. And I said, Dad, what do you want on the Derby? And he says, what? He goes, Kentucky Derby. He says, what time is this? It's 10 a.m. He says, you already drinking? I said, no. I've been drinking since Friday.
Right.
I mean, you know,
I don't
know.
Already drinking.
What do you think? I got a problem? I don't get up and drink. I'm not one of those guys. This buzz is from Friday. You know, like that's not a problem.
This buzz has been grandfathered in.
Like, that's not a problem. You know, guys can, you know, wave that off. It's like, nah, he's just having fun. But if you get up and drink, people are like, whoa. That guy had a beer at breakfast.
It's one of those markers for a problem, and I don't drink in the morning or really ever before the streetlights come on unless I walk into an airport, and then I just become Betty Ford.
Well, they make you drink in an airport.
I need booze. I need a Bloody Mary.
Yeah, because and they make you drink. Because you buy one drink for $7, and they say for an extra dollar, I'll make it a double. That's the only place they do that.
Right. No, because every place else, it doubles double the price.
Right.
Which sucks. And this is the place where, like, yeah, by the way, I've never not said no to that. Would you like to make it a double? What I've never and I walk through the airport at literally like 6:45 in the morning and start to go into detox. I need a Bloody Mary. We'll open this bar. And there's a different rule for every single airport you go to.
Oh yeah, right.
So it's like, oh yeah, no, this is Texas. We don't serve before noon on Sunday. Like, can we just get on international waters here? We're in an airport. And I'm not from here.
Right.
Why am I paying the penalty? I've not moved the family out to Texas to the airport. Hey, we moved into the Cinnabon. I'd like to get a cocktail. I'm half in the bag. I'm trying to get home from a wedding. You couldn't bust out some Stoli for a weary traveler. And by the way, I guarantee whatever the clock says on the wall, forget about it. In my head, it's time to boost.
Yeah, but that's what's nice about flying is, you know, when it's 2 a.m., you're taking a red eye, they still pour.
Well, once you're in the air, but every single airport has a different jurisdiction.
Yeah.
And I would argue that if it's an international airport, the second you cross through security, just like the duty-free shop, you're in international waters. Right?
That's exactly right.
Well, why not?
That's why, you know, but you are. I mean, you should be, you know, like, hey, when you're on an Indian reservation, you're on an international piece of property.
Give me some peyote. Look, my point is always this. Yes, it may be, you may be in Texas and it may be 11 in the morning on Sunday, but tell that to the guy who flew in from Bangkok.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
For him, it's Saturday night. He wants a drink.
Yeah. And I always feel sorry for the guys that have just flown over from Bangkok and they have just a common cold and they get off of, Air Japan plane or a China airplane coughing and you got to see the folks running from them, man.
Yeah, and by the way, have you ever been into the duty-free shop?
Oh, yeah.
I always want to go in there and get, like, a huge bottle of perfume and a case of cigarettes, but I'm not sure what I'm going to do with them. But it just sounds so great.
Yeah, and by the way, you're listening to KLSX 97.1 FM Talk. They wanted me to do that.
Yeah, like, and, you mean that steamer trunk of Lucky Strikes would be $272 on the outside, and I can get it for $186?
What do I have to say? I have to say KLSX Los Angeles? Okay. It's KLSX Los Angeles, everybody, just in case you've moved here and you're panicked that you don't know what station you're listening to. Adam Carolla's with us. But you know what? What's weird is when you order from a duty-free shop, you know, you pay the check, and then it shows the whole airplane filled with people that you have a problem. They bring your cigarettes and your vodka to the plane.
Oh, really?
And they stand in the front of the plane and they said, is there a Mr. Conway here? And you got to raise your hand and they walk your vodka and your cigarettes back to you.
Yeah.
You don't get that vodka and cigarettes until you get on the plane.
Is there a friend of Bill W. in this flight? Yeah, who's got a problem? Tim Conway, come on up. We got a 55-gallon drum of Stoli here. A carton of Marlboro Ultralight 100s. That's a chick cigarette. But anyway, enjoy the flight, everybody.
Yeah, it did happen to me on the way to my honeymoon. We went to the Bahamas. And I said to my wife, I said, listen, I mean, you know, we're going on a honeymoon, but still, I don't want to throw money away. And I'm going to get a big bottle of Grey Goose, the biggest one they have, at the duty free. And we'll just keep in the room and, you know, take a couple pops off it once in a while. She said, that's fine. You know, she was pretty open about it.
Wow, that had to be. I would have called it off. Still time for an annulment at that point, sweetie. That's an indicator. I don't travel without 6 liters of vodka. But what if something happens on the island and they run out of booze, sweetie? I'll be climbing the wall.
I eat those little bottles in the mini bar like popcorn shrimp.
Tim, you got to take the cap off. Can't just pop the whole bottle in your mouth.
But they brought this. We were on American Airlines. They're flying over the Bahamas. And they brought this huge bottle of vodka on the plane. And they said, is there a Mr. Conway on board? And I had to hit the stewardess light.
Right.
And they brought it to me. And they said, we got to put it in the overhead compartment. So she opens up and there's no room for it in there. And I said, sweating. I said, I'll just hold it. You know, I grab it from her. And she goes, no, you got to put it under your seat. There's no room under there. And she goes, I'll hold it for you. And I watched it as, and she was taken away.
And
as
you scream, not my medicine.
as if she was taking my daughter. I mean, I'm staring at it like, no.
The duty-free shop is easily the best lit store in the airport.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
The lighting is amazing for the duty-free shop. I don't know if there's mirrors on the floors. I don't know what goes on in there because I've never been in there. But it's the best lit store in the airport.
And I like the carton of cigarettes. It's not like a standard carton. It's like one big pack of cigarettes. And then there's like 30 packs in that pack.
It's funny, too, because it's like, whether it's the booze, the smokes, or the almond roca, it's all going to kill you.
Right. Yeah, who thought of that combo, though? I understand cigarettes and booze, but the Amon Roca, somebody's got that, Jones?
There's nothing in the duty-free shop that won't lead to your demise. They should really just start selling. They should really just start selling like cyanide tablets or something in there in bulk, because it's really, it's like, well, what do you want? You interested in lung cancer, clogging your arteries, or morbid obesity, or right, your liver exploding?
Duty free. Hey, yeah. Adam Carolla is with us. Now I heard you talking on Monday, I believe it was. I was up late and you were up early, so you were on the air, and I was about to go to sleep. Jeez. So I was listening to the show, and Tom Cruise had come by to watch football on a Sunday?
Yeah, Tom Cruise.
Is that right?
Yeah, came by Jimmy's.
Wow, was that recently?
Yeah.
Jesus, look at that, man.
1969. Recently.
I don't know. I mean, was it like last week or, you know, the
Vince
beginning
Lombardi's
of the season?
Packers were playing Paul Bear Bryant, Ohio. It was back when they would play college teams.
Was he cool to hang with?
Sonny Jurgensen, skippering the young upstart Redskins.
The AFL.
It was like two giant inflatable football men on the field and the guy with the jetpack. he came by Jimmy's house with his mom.
With his mom?
Yeah, with his mom.
Is that right?
And he made this mistake.
How many other moms were there? Was she comfortable?
She was the only mom.
Oh, she was.
Because my mom ever wanted to... Well, my mom... Well, first off, when I go to my mom's house, I ask her to leave. We don't exactly travel together.
Was your mom a bigger a-hole when your dad was there or when your dad was gone?
My mom was just out of it and just sort of, you know, hung out and did her own thing. And she didn't say much or do much. She just hammered the welfare checks and hung out.
My mom was very pleasant when my dad was around, but when he was a man, she turned into a beast.
Well, my mom didn't. She went from like a zero to like a 0.8. She didn't have a lot of range. Not a big personality, but Tom's mom is, you know, very, very nice and showed up there. And speaking of trunk, you know, Tom, evidently not a big fan of football, because he shows up to Kimmel's at literally 3:56.
Oh, the end of the second game.
End of the second game. Right. And we've cashed out the kegerator,
right,
and the microbrew over Jimmy's. Like, I've literally had 17 beers at that point.
Right.
And so when he shows up, you don't realize how drunk you're getting because everyone else around you is getting drunk.
Right.
But when Tom Cruise shows up, everyone was S-faced.
Right.
Because we've been there drinking since 9:30 in the morning.
And y'all try to do that thing where you get pulled over when you're buzzed, where you try to pull it together.
Yeah, so I try to pull it together. So I told someone earlier I was going to do my famous touchdown dance where I crap out the football.
Oh, I've seen that, yeah.
And, you know,
nobody's done that in the NFL.
One thing leads to another. And next thing you know, I'm standing in Kimmel's sunken living room. Tom Cruise is standing up on the steps next to his mom. The whole place is gathered around, and I'm yelling, "Hit me." Cruise throws me a touchdown pass, and I crap it out right in front of him and his mom.
I imagine he was thrilled that he came by.
He's delighted. He brought cupcakes. He drank water, and he showed up 3 minutes before, and not 3 minutes on the NFL clock, three minutes literally before the late game, and said, "Let's watch some football, fellas."
Oh, man. So it wasn't tough to tell who the Scientologist was at the party.
He was a complete Jimmy's cousin Sal's. Like, oh no, wait a minute, you're right. You don't do that. He was a completely nice guy.
Did he drink at all?
No. He was strike one.
Oh no.
He was a really nice guy, and he's a really well mannered guy, and he's a real cordial guy, and he's a real friendly guy. I talked to him for a while about his P-51 Mustang, his airplane, and everything.
You smoke a bowl with him?
I just me and his mom ripped the ball. Yeah, she had a six-shooter on her bong.
By the way, I heard that his mom leaves a little green for you. She's a real courteous smoker.
Really?
Yeah. She doesn't...
She doesn't cash the whole bowl? She doesn't bogart it?
No. She creeps the flame over the side of the bowl and leaves you some green.
Well, he's just a nice guy, but you can tell he's never been around guys.
Yeah.
I think he was raised by his mom, maybe had a sister. He just... He's not a guy's guy.
Right.
I guess. It's probably a good thing.
Right. Yeah, but look at him. He's not a guy's guy, but he's got, you know, $150 million, you know?
Yeah, and I'm sure he's smarter than all of us put together. But he's a very nice guy. And seemed to, I don't remember, but I was told he laughed heartily when I crapped out the football.
Wait a minute, who else were you looking at if you weren't looking at him when you're crapping out the football? Everyone else has seen it, right?
Tim, I know I gave you the heavyweight story earlier in the what feels like this morning, but I walked to Kimmel's house.
Oh, I see.
And I just got done telling you that I will take a nip and get behind the wheel. Now imagine when I'm on foot.
Right. Have you ever done this, though? When you're driving home... And, you know, not recently, but when you were, you know, younger and drove drunk a lot more. But you're driving home and you realize you're too buzzed to keep driving. Will you pull over and shut the car off and we'll start walking?
Never done it, but I've had friends that have pulled over and just went to sleep and still gotten a DUI.
Oh, yeah, right. As long as the keys are in it, right.
You will definitely still get yourself a DUI. Keys in or keys out. Just
being in the car?
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus.
Being in the car will get you the DUI.
You know, I saw recently, I was up at like doing 5 or 6 a.m. I was up and doing a morning show on the weekend about a year ago. And I was driving to work, and on La Cienega and right around 3rd Street, there's a guy in front of me, and the light turned green, and he wasn't moving. So I was honking at him, he wasn't moving. So I walked up to his car and banging on his window. He's asleep in the car.
Wow.
And I'm banging on the window, and he's not responding. I'm like, man, that's a sure way to get a DUI. It's in drive. His foot is on the brake, fortunately, and he's passed out at the intersection.
Again, you know, as the great Clint Eastwood once said, man's got to know his own limitations or limits or whatever it is. Right. And look, if you're the guy who gets, you know, S-face and thinks it'd be a good idea to pick on Chuck Liddell or yell drink from your helmets from the roof or hit on other guys' chicks or drive into oncoming traffic, easy on the booze.
Right.
Pure and simple, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. All right, Adam, thanks for coming by, man. We moved all the commercials to later, and I really enjoy this time we spend together, man.
Tim, always a pleasure. And, you know, I don't like to talk about myself, but I'd be remiss if I did not say.
That's why we like you to open up when you're on the air with us, you know, where you can talk about yourself.
Usually, at my show, I'm just spinning discs all morning. Finally, I get a little room to breathe.
Yeah.
But the Hammer, which I always give a nice plug to on your program, Sports Illustrated, best sports comedy of 08.
Is that right? Congratulations,
yes,
man.
Named all the other movies it beat out and called it the in their best of.
Wow.
08. So
what came in second? Batman?
They basically just said screw you to George Clooney and Leatherhead.
Oh, I see. Right. Yeah.
They just went through all the other ones and said this one was the best.
Dude, that's great, man.
Actually, they gave The Wrestler the best sports movie of 08,
right.
And they gave The Hammer the best sports comedy of 08.
But this actually probably defines, you know, the way you're brought up and who you are, that you were probably more thrilled with that than if you won the SAG Award.
I mean, if SI says you did the best sports comedy of the year, I sound like an ass, but, like, well, I'd rather hear it from them than from my dad.
Right, exactly.
So that's pretty cool. So here's my point to the dozens of people listening, if you haven't seen The Hammer. How bad could it be?
Right.
Two thumbs up at the movies and best sports comedy of 08, so says Sports Illustrated. How, and not low budget sports comedy or any of that, just best sports comedy. How bad could it be, people? It couldn't be that bad. I know you don't want to see it because I'm in it and you think it's going to suck, but how bad could it be with that?
The one thing that I'd love for, if you ever re-edit the movie, whatever, I saw it when I was high, and I don't like to admit it because I only get high like once a year or so. But I did see when I was high, and when you kept shutting that alarm clock off,
mm-hmm.
I swear to God I was going to wet myself. I wish that that went on for 20 minutes.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow. Like, you've hit the snooze bar before,
right?
Huh? It's funny that snooze bar has the word bar in it, because the reason you're hitting it is because you're at the bar,
right,
hitting the booze bar too hard the night before, and now you got to hit the snooze bar.
And the snooze bar drops an attitude with you after you hit it six times.
I know.
It's like, F it. You're not going to get up. I'm going to stop annoying you. Shutting down. All right, buddy. Thanks for coming on, and listen to you on Monday morning. Are you on tomorrow as well?
Yeah, that's
Saturday.
Right.
Look
Saturday
at
show, baby.
Wow, fantastic. You get up early on Saturday morning. Come in here and do that, right?
Never stop working, Timmy.
Yeah. All right, buddy. Thanks for coming on, man.
Great talking to you.
All right, Adam Carolla, everybody. Go out and buy this hammer. And it is available at Amazon or wherever DVDs are sold. But it really is a great movie. And if you are inclined to, smoke a bowl or smoke a joint like Randy Wang in here, the scene where he keeps shutting off that alarm clock is hysterical. And if you are too high, you might wet yourself. So go out and check that out. All right, we're going to do the news next with Gina Grad. Gina, what's going on with that news?
Well, Tim has wasted way too many toys on Sophia, and the Westboro Baptist Church once again gives my home state a bad name. We'll talk about this and more after the break.
Oh, boy. All right, the news with Gina Grad coming up. We've got to thank Adam Carolla for coming on. Look at that, almost an hour and 15 minutes or so. Buy the DVD, The Hammer. Go out and get that DVD at Amazon.com. We're a Blockbuster. It's all over the place. This is the Tim Conway Jr. Show live at 97.1 FM.